So firstly, John 8, verse 12. Again, Jesus spoke to them, saying, I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will not walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. And then we skip to chapter 9, where Jesus picks this up. As Jesus passed by, he saw a man blind from birth. And his disciples asked him, Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? Jesus answered, it wasn't that this man sinned or his parents, but that the works of God might be displayed in him. We must work the works of him who sent me while it is day. Night is coming when no one can work. As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world. Having said these things, he spat on the ground and made mud with the saliva, and then he anointed the man's eyes with the mud and said to him, go wash in the pool of Siloam, which means sent. So he went and washed and came back seeing. The neighbors and those who had seen him before as a beggar were saying, is this not the man who used to sit and beg? Some said, it is he. Others said, no, but he's like him. He kept saying, I am the man. So they said to him, then how were your eyes opened? He answered, the man called Jesus made mud and anointed my eyes and said to me, go to Siloam and wash. So I went and washed and received my sight. They said to him, where is he? He said, I don't know. They brought to the Pharisees the man who had formerly been blind, and now it was a Sabbath day when Jesus made the mud and opened his eyes. So the Pharisees again asked him how he had received his sight. And he said to them, he put mud on my eyes and I washed and I see. Some of the Pharisees said, this man is not from God, for he doesn't keep the Sabbath. But others said, how can a man who is a sinner do such signs? And there was a division among them. So they said again to the blind man, what do you say about him, since he has opened your eyes? He said, he's a prophet. The Jews did not believe that he had been blind and had received his sight, until they called the parents of the man who had received his sight, and they asked them, is this your son who you say was born blind? How then does he now see? His parents answered, we know that this is our son, and that he was born blind, but how he now sees, we don't know, nor do we know who opened his eyes. Ask him, he's of age, he'll speak for himself. His parents said these things because they feared the Jews. For the Jews had already agreed that if anyone should confess Jesus to be the Christ, he was to be put out of the synagogue. Therefore his parents said, he is of age, ask him. So for the second time they called the man who had been blind and said to him, give glory to God, we know that this man is a sinner. He answered, whether he's a sinner I don't know. One thing I do know, that though I was blind, now I see. They said to him, what did he do to you? How did he open your eyes? He answered them, I've told you already and you wouldn't listen. Why do you want to hear it again? Do you also want to become his disciples? And they reviled him, saying, you are his disciples. We're disciples of Moses. We know that God has spoken to Moses, but as for this man, we don't know where he comes from. The man answered, why, this is an amazing thing. You don't know where he comes from, and yet he opened my eyes. We know that God doesn't listen to sinners, but if anyone is a worshipper of God and does his will, God listens to him. Never since the world began has it been heard that anyone opened the eyes of a man born blind. If this man were not from God, he could do nothing. They answered him, you were born in utter sin, and would you teach us? And they cast him out. Jesus heard that they'd cast him out, and having found him, he said, do you believe in the Son of Man? He answered, and who is he, sir, that I may believe in him? Jesus said to him, you have seen him, and it is he who is speaking to you. He said, Lord, I believe. And he worshipped him. Jesus said, for judgment I came into this world, that those who do not see may see, and those who see may become blind. Some of the Pharisees near him heard these things, and they said to him, are we also blind? Jesus said to them, if you were blind, you would have no guilt. But now that you say we see, your guilt remains. Sometimes people talk about feeling like a mushroom in the workplace. I don't know if you've come across this expression, people saying they feel like a mushroom in the workplace. Basically, you're kept in the dark, and once in a while you have some manure thrown over you. Now, I don't know whether that's an accurate description of mushroom cultivation, but it does seem to be a pretty common experience in the workplace. And people refer to mushroom management, and if you come across that, where, you know, managers, they just don't tell you what's going on. You're given work, you're not told what the purpose of the work is, you're kept in the dark. But feeling like a mushroom is not just a problem in work, it is also a problem in life. Do you ever feel like yourself? Have you ever felt like you've been kept in the dark in life? That the management aren't really telling you what's going on in life? I mean, we get on with it, don't we? We eat, we work, we sleep, we go on holiday, we retire, we die. But you know, what's the big picture? What's the meaning of it all? Where have we come from? Where are we going? What's the point? Who am I? What is right? What is wrong? We're in the dark with some manure occasionally thrown over us from time to time when things go wrong in life. It can feel like that. Now, if you feel like a mushroom at work, you can go and speak to your boss about it or speak to HR, or I guess you can get a new job. But where do you go if you feel like a mushroom in life? Jesus said, John 8:12, I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will not walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. You in the dark? Jesus is the light. But what exactly does he mean? And, you know, what if you say, well, I don't actually feel like a mushroom. You know, what if I don't feel in the dark? What relevance is Jesus to me then? In this series, we're looking at these claims Jesus made about himself. We put this slide up the other week. All these claims recorded in John's Gospel, his eyewitness account. Each of these sayings begins with, I am. So I am the good shepherd, we looked at last week. And today we're looking at, I am the light of the world. So bottom left. Someone might say, why should I bother with Jesus? What can Jesus do for me? Someone who's skeptical. In reply, Jesus says, I'm the light of the world. Whoever follows me will not walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. What does he mean? So you'll see from the outline, we're going to look at two things. So inside your service sheets, firstly, that we are in the dark, and secondly, that Jesus is the light. Jesus being the light in the darkness is not just the theme of that key verse, John 8:12, but it's also the theme of the whole of chapter 9, which I just read to us. So if you've still got that open on page 1079, you'll see there in 9 verse 5, Jesus says, as long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world. But look at how the chapter begins, verse 1 of chapter 9. As Jesus passed by, he saw a man blind from birth. So this blind man was begging by the side of the road as Jesus passed by. Now, I guess that is not something we see very much in our country. I guess when we hear blind beggar, we're more likely to think of the Blind Beggar pub, one of the most famous pubs in the East End, where that gangster Ronnie Cray shot dead George Cornell back in 1966. But, of course, in other countries of the world, in poorer countries, a blind beggar at the roadside is sadly all too common a sight. And it's not hard, is it, to imagine how awful life would have been for this poor man. A life lived in the dark. A life totally dependent on other people. Just imagine yourself in that situation. Imagine being blind from birth. Unable to see your friends. Can't see your wife, your husband, your children, if you've got those. Unable to see the beauty of a flower or the stars or sunset, unable to watch the latest series on Netflix, just totally in the dark. I remember many years ago, one Christmas time, I joined a group who were going carol singing in the local village where my parents lived, and they went carol singing to people who were housebound, who couldn't get out of their homes. And it was this cold, dark winter evening, and one visit I remember very vividly was to this elderly widow. And so I remember we filed into the living room where she was sitting in the dark. See, she was blind, so she didn't have the lights on. It was a kind of double darkness. She was in the dark because she was blind, and she was in the dark as well because she was sitting in the dark. It's really sad, and it is really relevant. Because blindness is a picture of the human condition. Blindness is a picture of the human condition. You see, according to the WHO, 36 million people in the world today are registered blind. But according to the Bible, the 7.6 billion people alive today were all born blind. They were born blind, every single one of them. Blind from birth, not physically, but spiritually. This blind beggar that Jesus met by the roadside, sitting there in the dark, was physically blind, and we may pity him. But the Bible is saying, that's you, that is your state, my state, by nature, that we are blind from birth, spiritually, and we are in the dark. Darkness is a theme that runs right through John's Gospel. The book begins in, if you want to just flick over to it to see, otherwise just listen, so chapter 1, verse 5, by describing the world as a dark place. So 1:5, it says, the light, speaking of Jesus, the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. It's not speaking there about a physical darkness, it's speaking about a spiritual darkness, a moral darkness. That although we were made by God for God, we've gone our own way as a human race, we've rejected his loving rule, and because of this, the world has been plunged into darkness, spiritually. God is light. Having rejected him, we find ourselves on the wrong side of him, alienated from him, and in the dark, spiritually. Now, what this feels like on the ground varies from person to person, but what this feels like for people to be in the dark spiritually. So some people become aware of this spiritual darkness when they realize that they don't have answers to the big questions of life. So one man who runs his own company, he said this. He says, I was in the gym on the treadmill, and I suddenly realized I'm 49, I'm on the treadmill of life, and I haven't got a clue where I'm going. I need answers. And he said, there's probably some good stuff in the Bible, so it's time I looked at it. Or another company chairman, he put it this way. He said, I was on my knees gardening at the weekend, and it suddenly struck me that I've lost two friends to cancer, one friend to a heart attack, another to a brain aneurysm in the last year. I'm 62. I haven't got a clue what I believe. And that was the beginning of him reading the Bible with a Christian friend. So people's experience of what it feels like to be in the dark spiritually can vary, but those are just two examples. But Jesus describes this experience of being in the dark spiritually. He describes it in two ways in John's Gospel. I'll put them on the screen for you. So the first one's there in John 11, verse 10. He says, if anyone walks in the night, he stumbles. She stumbles. If anyone walks in the night, in the dark, he or she stumbles. So you say, you know, if it's dark and you can't see where you're going, you stumble. You bump into things. Now, physically, we've all had that experience. I have lost count of the number of times that I've whacked my shins on that really pointy corner of the bit of the bed when I've got up in the night to do something. And, you know, I mean, people say childbirth is painful, but I can tell you it is nothing compared to that experience. Or maybe you've had the experience of walking through a forest along a path in the dark. And it's very easy to lose your footing and you twist your ankle or you fall flat on your face. Or maybe you've had that experience of being in a dark basement, maybe putting your bike there, and then you have to switch the light off before you get to the top of the stairs. And you leg out the top of the stairs. I remember doing this as a kid, and you fall flat on your face to try and get to the door before the icy hand grabs you from behind. Physical. Spiritually, in the dark, the same thing happens. We stumble. We don't think as we should. We don't live as we should. We don't live to please God, we live to please ourselves. We don't love other people as we should, but instead we sort of bump into them in our relationships. We cause damage to them, cause damage to ourselves. Our hearts, our lives are darkened, we are spiritually blind. Another way Jesus describes it, this is John 12:35, he says, the one who walks in the darkness does not know where he is going. The one who walks in the darkness does not know where he is going. Has that ever happened to you? You got lost in the dark and you were confused. You were disorientated. You were fearful, maybe. Well, life apart from God is like that. We don't know where we're going. We've got No ultimate direction, no map, no signs, just wandering through life. I remember once being down in the tube at Bank, and if you've been down there, you'll know it's a complete rabbit warren, isn't it? A different, like a maze down there. And this was at rush hour. And there was a blind man who was standing there at the intersection to these various tunnels, these corridors. And there were crowds of people going this way, going that way. There was noise, there was hustle, bustle. And this poor man was standing there, and he's turning this way, he's turning that way. And he was completely disorientated, and he was lost, and he was vulnerable. And thankfully someone went over and took pity on him and took him by the arm and led him out. Being spiritually blind is like that. You don't know where you're going in life. And, you know, sure, you may set yourself some goals. You set yourself a goal to be happy or achieve this, achieve that. But when it comes to ultimate direction in life, you're in the dark. That is how Jesus describes the human condition apart from God, that we're in the dark. We're spiritually blind from birth because of our rejection of God. We're in the dark in our thinking, we're in the dark in our living. But this present darkness is not our biggest problem, according to Jesus. Jesus warned about a future darkness, an ultimate darkness, and he referred to it in various ways. He talked about it as an outer darkness, where there will be weeping, he said, where there will be gnashing of teeth. Described it as a place of ultimate alienation from God, a place of final separation from the light of his goodness, a place he called hell. And that is what by nature we are stumbling towards, like blind people who are stumbling towards a cliff edge. Now back in chapter 6, verse 60, we looked at this earlier in the summer, some of Jesus' disciples say of his teaching the following. They say, this is a hard saying. This is a hard saying. Well, Jesus' teaching about eternity definitely comes amongst the hard sayings of Jesus, doesn't it? But it's true. It's what Jesus teaches. And he's saying that God is just, judgment is coming. And however we feel our lives may be going at the moment, this is the problem that all of us face by nature. This is what lies ahead. So we've got present darkness, we've got ultimate darkness. What is the solution? Well, Jesus said, I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will not walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. The whole reason Jesus came was to rescue us from both darknesses, the present darkness and the ultimate darkness. He is the light of the world. If we follow him, we will enjoy the light of life, both now and eternally. When Jesus hung on the cross, it was in the middle of the day, when suddenly darkness fell and covered the whole land for 3 hours. Jesus, the light of the world, was dying in our place. He was experiencing the darkness caused by our wrongdoing, our sin. And he absorbed all that darkness in himself. He paid the penalty that we deserve. And then he was raised to life, and he burst out of that dark tomb, that tomb of death. And as the risen Lord, Jesus is the light of life, the light of the world. And he says if we follow him, we will enjoy the light of life. Doesn't mean to say that everything in our lives will work out well. Maybe far from it. But it means that we'll no longer stumble through life in the dark, but we'll walk in the light. We'll know that we're forgiven by God. We'll know God. We're children of God. We know how to live in a way that pleases God. And we're changed by God and his Spirit to do that. We know where we're going. We've got a clear sense of direction. So living for God, serving God, and heading for eternity with him in the kingdom of light. Now that is what Jesus, as the light of the world, can do for us. Or so he claimed. How do we know that Jesus can deliver? Well, we know that because of what he did for the blind man in John chapter 9. So if you've got that still open, in verse 5, Jesus says, as long as I'm in the world, I am the light of the world. And then it goes on straight away to say, he then makes some mud, he puts it on the man's eyes, and he tells him to go and wash. And verse 7 we read, so he went and washed and came back seeing. Jesus healed him. Jesus opened his blind eyes. And the point is this, that what Jesus did physically for that man, he can do spiritually for any of us. That's the whole point of the miracle. The miracle is evidence, it is proof that Jesus really is the light of the world. The change from darkness to light that that man experienced physically, countless people have experienced spiritually in the centuries since Jesus walked this planet. Light flooding into the darkness of their lives. I don't know if you've come across this book, Unbroken, or maybe you've seen the film, but it tells the true story, the life story of this guy, Louis Zamperini. During World War II, this guy's plane crashed in the Pacific, and he survived for 47 days in a lifeboat, and then he got picked up by the Japanese and was made a prisoner of war, and he spent 2 brutal years in a prisoner of war camp. He then returned home to the States, a hero, but his hatred for one of his former captors, one of the former prison guards, his hatred for him took hold of him. And his life just spiraled downwards and downwards and downwards in drunkenness and reckless behavior. And he ended up believing that his only hope lay in murder. His life was in deep, deep darkness. But then suddenly, his life was transformed. And the darkness in his life was flooded with light. And joy replaced anger in his heart. And he freely forgave his former captors. And a new life began. And he died in 2014 at the age of 97. Now, what brought about that change? Well, in 1949, and I think this is something that the film misses out, but the book, he clearly relates in the book. In 1949, the evangelist Billy Graham came to Los Angeles. And very reluctantly, this guy Louis went along and he heard about Jesus. And this is his account of what happened. He says, I dropped to my knees and for the first time in my life, I truly humbled myself before the Lord. I asked him to forgive me for my sinful life. I made no excuses. He had said, whoever shall call upon the name of the Lord shall be saved. So I took him at his word. I begged for his pardon and I asked Jesus to come into my life. Well, following Jesus brought that man out of darkness into the light. The response that Jesus calls each one of us to is simple, but it is life-changing, as that guy Louis discovered. I am the light of the world. Whoever, he says, follows me will not walk in darkness. Follows him, not follows him on Twitter or follows him on Facebook, but believes in him, trusts in him, lives for him. As Jesus says in John 12:46, I've come into the world as a light, so that whoever believes in me may not remain in the darkness. Now that is a wonderful promise, that is an amazing promise, and we may say, well, what's not to like in that? But many at the time didn't like it. They didn't like it at all. In the news recently, there was a report about something called the London Project to Cure Blindness. And we were talking about these 2 London professors who made this big breakthrough. And these 2 professors reckon that they will have a cure for the most common cause of blindness within 5 years. Now, if these guys can deliver on that, if these 2 professors can deliver on that, they're going to be heroes, aren't they? They're going to be putting statues of these guys up in Parliament Square. But the response to Jesus healing a man blind from birth was vicious. It wasn't celebration, it was confrontation. And the rest of chapter 9 that we read describes the hostility of the religious leaders, the Pharisees. And in that account that I read out, they take the beggar and they interrogate this poor guy repeatedly. And they refuse to accept his account of what's happened. And then they get the parents in and they interrogate the parents and still they refuse to believe. And they end up by throwing this poor guy out of the synagogue, excommunicating him. And they end up plotting to kill Jesus by the end of the chapter. Now, we might think, what on earth is going on? Why does such a patently good deed by Jesus, why does it provoke such a hostile reaction, a vicious reaction by these religious people. When Ronan, who I think is in South Africa at the moment, he's off travelling, when he got baptised a few months ago, you maybe were here for this, he shared, didn't he, how strongly his non-Christian friends and colleagues reacted when he told them that he'd started going to church, he'd started doing a Christianity Explored course, and then when he told them he was going to get baptised. And he was quite taken aback by how strong their reaction was, that they were saying to him, "You're out of your mind." And these were some old drinking buddies. They're saying, you need to come and drink more. That's your problem. You're not drinking enough. Why such hostility to Jesus both now and then? Well, Jesus tells us the reason why back in John chapter 3 and in verse 19. He says, "Light has come into the world, and people loved the darkness rather than the light, because their deeds were evil." And that verse goes on to say, "For everyone who does wicked things hates the light and doesn't come to the light, lest his deeds should be exposed." Everyone who does wicked things hates the light. Well, there it is. That it's saying that we know that God is there. We know we should be living for him, and we're not doing that. And so we're a bit like kids who have done something wrong. And when kids do something wrong, what do? They tend to go and find somewhere dark and they hide because they don't want to be exposed. They don't want to be found out. And so with God, we know we've done wrong. And so when the light comes, we run away from it by nature. We're a bit like burglars who are sort of staying in the darkness, in the shadows. Or we're a bit like, you know, criminals who are trying to hide from the searchlight of the police helicopter that's hovering overhead. The light is threatening to a world that is on the run from God. We hate the light. I'm sure you've had that experience of thinking that your windows at home were clean, and then a bright sunny day, you suddenly see how dirty your windows are. And so the same with us, that we may think that we are pretty good, we're nice people, but then the light of Christ is switched on and it shines through our hearts and lives. It exposes the dirt in our lives. We don't like it. Now, however uncomfortable that kind of exposure may be, it is for our good. Because the light that exposes is the light that brings cleansing and healing and life and forgiveness. And if we reject this light of Christ, we stay in the dark both now and eternally. For those who do reject him, Jesus, he is still the light of the world, but I guess he's a bit like a super bright light that actually blinds you. It's a bit like if you look at the sun through a telescope, not something I'd recommend doing. So with the sun, so with Jesus, the Son of God, he becomes a super bright light that blinds people who reject him. And so just if you've got it open still, look at the warning at the end of chapter 9, the end of this account. Verse 39, Jesus says, "For judgment I came into this world, that those who do not see may see," like the blind man, "and those who see may become blind." Isn't that striking, that those who see may become blind? Now, the religious leaders were that second category of people. Those who see, in inverted commas, that is to say, who thought they could see. So these religious people wouldn't accept they had a problem. They wouldn't accept that they were spiritually blind. They thought they could already see. And so did you notice that they took offense at Jesus? Verse 40, they say to him, "Are we also blind?" See, the protest, the outrage. Are we also blind? And so in judgment, they were plunged into even greater darkness. They became even blinder, if that is possible, blinded by the light. As Jesus says at the very last verse of the chapter, verse 41, "If you were blind, you would have no guilt. But now that you say we see, your guilt remains." Many people today are like the Pharisees back then. They reject the diagnosis. They take offense at Jesus. They won't accept that spiritually they are blind. They are in the dark. They think they see already, and they're already enlightened. And people actually use that kind of language, don't they, about being enlightened. Just let me give you a couple of examples of this. This 18th century movement in Europe, you may have come across, which basically championed reason, our minds, as being the solution to everything, was called the Enlightenment. Maybe this back in school days, the Enlightenment. And its motto was, in Latin, sapere aude, which means dare to be wise. But the Enlightenment saw wisdom as this, that wisdom was rejecting any authority and just relying on your own thinking, your own mind. And so what it did is it rejected traditional beliefs, traditional customs, and the basic idea was, you know, mankind doesn't need these superstitions anymore. We've grown up. We can work things out by ourselves. I spent 6 years of my life going around with wearing a school blazer which bore a crest with an owl on and the words, sapere aude, under it. And little did I know, I was a walking advert for the Enlightenment. If I'd known at the time, I'd have ripped it off. Its attitudes live on today. People who say, you know, I'm intelligent, I'm educated, I can work things out for myself, we can find our own solutions, humanity can sort itself out unaided, we don't need God. That sort of belief in ourselves, that belief in our own abilities, we can work things out, that is a direct challenge to the claim of Jesus to be the light of the world. You see, if we can solve everything ourselves, we don't need him. People see themselves as so enlightened, don't they? Even use that language. Liberal views about everything. Got my own personal taste is my moral code. Jesus is saying that is a dead end. He is the light of the world. And following him is the only way out of the darkness. Well, just one other example. Others claim, don't they? They've found enlightenment through other philosophies. Meditation, Eastern mysticism, looking within. Buddha, of course, means the enlightened one. That's what Buddha means, the enlightened one. And Buddhism teaches that enlightenment comes through, not through Jesus, it comes through meditation. So it's claimed that through meditation you eventually reach the stage of awakening to ultimate truth. You're freed from this endless cycle of personal reincarnation. And this is based on the experience of that guy, Siddhartha Gautama, who at the age of 35 apparently attained the supreme enlightenment during meditation. He became the first Buddha. Now, those kind of ideas, they're sort of repackaged, aren't they, for the Western market today. They're very popular today. But if Jesus is the light of the world, then those who seek enlightenment through meditation, they're still in the dark, and they're heading for the ultimate darkness. Jesus says that he is the light of the world. What are we to make of these competing claims to be the light to follow? Whether it's the light of reason or the light of light within through meditation, what do we make of it? There's a chilling warning in the New Testament, and it comes in 2 Corinthians 11, verse 14, which says this. I can't remember if I've got a slide for this. No, I haven't got a slide. Just listen to this. So 2 Corinthians 11, 14. It says, Satan disguises himself as an angel of light. Satan, speaking of the devil, disguises himself as an angel of light. It's a chilling verse, isn't it? It's saying that behind all these other claims to be the light that we should follow in the darkness, ultimately behind all those claims stands the devil himself. That the prince of darkness doesn't appear in black, he masquerades as an angel of light. In the darkness, we can get desperate. In the darkness, the temptation is to follow whatever light happens to be around, but any light will not do. The warning here is very clear. Any light will not do. This book here, I was born on the Wirral Peninsula. This is up in northwest of England, other side of the Mersey from Liverpool. And 150 years ago, this stretch of coastland was renowned for its wreckers. Now, the wreckers were basically robbers. They were smugglers. And what they would do is, as the ships were coming into Liverpool, they would divert these ships onto sandbanks and rocks using decoys. They'd light decoy lights, decoy flares, to lure them onto the sandbanks. And then once they'd done that to the ship, These wreckers, they showed no more mercy towards the crew, the passengers. And even if they spared the lives of the crew and the passengers, they took all the cargo for themselves and their belongings. There's an old prayer from these wreckers. I'm not quite sure why they were praying, but there's an old prayer which goes, God bless father and God bless mother and God send us a wreck before morning. Arr! There's a certain James Stonehouse, he wrote this, 1863. He said, many a fierce fire has been lighted on the Wirral shore on stormy nights to lure the good ship onto the Burbo or Hoyle banks there to beat and strain and throb until her timbers parted. Look at the subtitle of this book about these wreckers. A story of killing seas, a story of false lights and plundered shipwrecks. In the spiritual darkness, beware false lights. Because the Bible is saying one of the strategies of the enemy is to light fires to lure people away from God to their own destruction. The only safe light to follow is Jesus. He is the light of the world. I am the light of the world, Jesus says. If we reject him, we are condemning ourselves to staying in the dark, not just now, but eternally. But that's not what he wants. But the choice he puts before us is very stark. It's black and white, darkness and light. I am the light of the world, Jesus says. Whoever follows me will not walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. Let's pause for a moment to reflect on what Jesus has taught us. And then we're going to continue in prayer. And Sushma is going to come and lead us. Let's just take a moment to reflect and pray in our own hearts and minds before that.